Welcome to this latest episode of A Bloody Mess, a badly researched true crime podcast. After a brief deviation from the norm, we are back to our usual selves, our usual subject matter, and our usual episode format.
Unfortunately, the rest of the world has gone to shit, as well as the football season having stopped.
Oh, yeah, there is that. For those of you listening in the future or the past, if you can do that, we are at the height of the corona crisis at the minute. COVID-19 has taken hold, but it's not letting us... It's not stopping us doing this, basically, because I don't leave the house. So
it's actually accelerated you doing the podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, because I can't go to the cinema. That's literally the one thing that stops me. I can't go to the cinema, I can't go to Nando's, so yeah, I thought I might as well do this thing I agreed to do 12 months ago. As you can hear, I'm not on my own. He's the co-host and technical wizard who takes care of all the editing and uploading. And without him, well, I'm not going to say there wouldn't be a podcast, because there still will be a podcast recorded, but no one would be able to hear it.
Well, it would just be you talking to yourself.
Well, yeah, that's just normal life for me. Anyway, there he is, it's Chen.
Hiya.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm always good, mate.
Just getting a bit annoyed at my audacity levels, but I'm sure my editing skills will come in handy.
Now, by that, do you mean what your screen looks like, or do you mean the level of audacity in your personality?
What my screen looks like.
Oh, right, okay, that's fine.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
It'll be fine. Anyway, so I'd like you all to join us in some coronavirus distraction and let your ears absorb the story of the manipulative and violent piece of shit, Glyn Dix.
Why are we talking about Glyn's dicks? Has he got more than one?
Fucking hell, Chen.
It's more where that came from.
I hope not.
There's been a murder of podcasts. A bloody mess.
On paper, this case looks relatively mundane, albeit tragic and sad. It basically goes, man murders woman, man goes to prison. Man comes out of prison, man murders second woman. But the more you look into it, you'll see why we've chose to focus on this man. But to start, let me take you back to 2004, June 19th to be precise.
Isn't that the date of the Nigeria oil pipeline blast, where more than 100 people were killed when an explosion on a vandalised pipeline was ignited by a spark from passing motorcycle in the village of Amoke Oguhugi?
I think that was...
No, you'd be wrong. That was June 19th, 2003.
Oh, right.
I think you might even be talking about June 19th, where Pope Innocent III fired Adolf I as Archbishop of Cologne in Germany.
Cologne?
I just say Cologne.
Cologne, have you forgotten how to speak?
Yes.
Cologne in Germany?
In Germany. Is that the one you're speaking of?
No.
No, that was 2000 and... No, that was 1205.
That was 2006.
One more date for you. One more. June 19th, 1269.
Yeah.
King Louis IX. So is that 9? King Louis the 9th?
Yeah, I think so.
Of France decreed all Jews must wear a badge of shame.
Really?
Yes.
That, fucking, that's terrible.
Yeah. There you go. There's some June 19th. Facts for you. Also, it's sorry, I've not written it down, but it's Boris Johnson's birthday as well, apparently.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah. Worst day ever.
Yeah.
You can carry on.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I think so.
No more dates and distractions to offer me?
Not yet.
Not yet, but there might be some coming up. That's fine. That's what we like to hear.
That's how we roll.
Okay, going back to June 19th, 2004. Adam Langford returned to the home in Redditch, Worcester that he shared with his mother and her new husband, Glyn Dix. Adam found Glyn naked in the kitchen, standing over the lifeless, dismembered body of his mother. Knife in hand, Glyn turned to him and said,
"We've had a little argument."
I don't know how he speaks.
Are you gonna do that as his voice? That's probably quite a good voice going off what he looks like. We'll throw some pictures up when the episode goes up.
We'll say we are and maybe never do it.
Yeah, you know, the usual thing.
Exactly.
Right, so let's move back a few years. Glyn Dix was born in 1953. And that's about all I can find out about his childhood. For whatever reason, there's very little information about him and his upbringing.
In a way, that's you know, that's probably a good thing. Fuck him.
Well, yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, it takes you away from, well, trying to excuse his behaviour, but also giving him any notoriety or anything like that. Strangely enough, this person doesn't have a page on Wikipedia. Sorry, Murderpedia.
Ah, right, yeah.
Everything's
anyway, on Wikipedia.
Exactly. He was known to have moved around from area to area and was a bit of a loner. Settling in Gloucester in the late 1970s, by sheer chance, this was less than a mile from Fred and Rose West's house. Now, some newspapers have speculated that they might have known each other, perhaps they went to the same kind of events, but I think they're forgetting that murdering people isn't really a social thing, is it?
Yeah, but that's kind of what newspapers do, it's just shitty sensationalist journalism, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, they're just trying to sell papers.
Yeah. Most people will realise that wasn't actually my sentence as well. I don't speak like that.
Yeah, you do.
No. No, no, no.
You'll do when I write it in and tell you.
I do when it's highlighted in red.
Exactly. Our colour-coded scripts. Anyway, speaking of Dix, 26-year-old Dix recently moved to the area. Nobody knew anything about him. He was living in a rented house owned by husband and wife, James and Pia Overbury. Mother of two, Pia Overbury, made regular visits with her daughters to collect rent from Dix. He was a very bad payer. His rent was regularly late for long periods of time, and he had many excuses as to why this was. Now, Pia believed these excuses, and she did pity him. Wanting to help people was in her nature, but this was a side of her personality that Dix willfully exploited.
So, without knowing much of the story, do you think we're seeing the manipulative skill of a psychopath here, as we've covered many times before? They have a unique talent for bending people to their will.
Now, I hadn't actually picked up on this, but I do think that, yeah, that ties into the fact with him being a psychopath, as well as what other conditions he may or may not have that we'll find out about later on.
Ooh,
I know, spoiler alert. But I do think that's a very good point. There could be something, an element of that in him. Like, if he's managed to basically just get away with what he being a weirdo.
Yeah.
And being a weird fuck for all this time. That's probably why he's manipulating people. He can just, he's very coercive personality, very persuasive as well. That's a very good point.
Thank you.
Pia was last seen leaving her work in a Brockworth cake shop in the afternoon of October 1st, 1979. She said she was going to a party that night and her husband didn't expect her back until late that evening. But she never arrived at the party and her husband never saw her alive again. It was just 4 days before building contractor James reported his wife of 12 years missing.
Surely you'd report it before 4 days.
See, I thought that too, but this next bit kind of fits in with that. Now, she had a minivan. For American listeners, this isn't like what you'd call a minivan. This is literally, you know, the classic British car, the Mini. It's that with a big back end that makes it a van. They are pretty cool.
Oh.
But They're a very 70s vehicle, but they are cool as fuck. Anyway, Pia's minivan was found in a car park at the Gloucester railway station, suggesting she might have just run away.
Ah.
The 32-year-old mother of two reportedly had a stormy relationship with husband James. So that's me thinking, perhaps these have had many rows in the past where she's just gone for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Or like gone for 1 or 2 days. This was before mobile phones, so it wasn't unusual to go a day without hearing from someone.
Okay, that makes sense now.
They've had a row. She's stormed out, or she's ran away scared.
Yeah.
Gone to a friend's house. She comes back on the Monday. If this was, I don't know what day of the week it was, but say it was a Friday, say he's given her the weekend, Sunday night she's not back, he's tried ringing around her friend's houses, hasn't found anything, given it till Monday, she's not gone to work and gone, right, I'm going to report it Tuesday. So I'm not having a go at him for waiting 4 days. If the relationship was bad, I can kind of see why he didn't do it immediately.
Fine, makes sense now.
Yeah. Plus, I suppose you don't want to kind of face the reality that your wife's gone missing either, do you?
Yeah, and there'll be that side of you that's like, oh, I don't want to waste police time, she just might be away for a couple of days.
Yeah, exactly. No.
Yeah. Fine. Point made.
Sadly, on October 21st, a dog walker saw what looked to be a pair of legs sticking out from underneath a pile of branches and undergrowth. She thought she was mistaken, but what looked like a flowery skirt confirmed her worst fears. After lying undiscovered for more than 2 weeks, Pia's badly decomposed body was found in a shallow grave in woodland, and everyone's worst fears were confirmed. The post-mortem confirmed she'd been gagged, blindfolded, tied to a tree and raped before being shot in the back of the head at point-blank range. Now, unsurprisingly, husband James Overbury was prime suspect at first. I think it's just a matter of routine, really, to you go husband, and then, like, it's nearly always the partner that they look at first.
Yeah, they always, you always see that on TV shows, like, always the husband or always the wife.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, police attention then moved to Pierre's father, who, it did take them some time to track him down, but they were both ruled out eventually. See, now, Glyn Dix was subsequently interviewed as a witness. Police practice at the time, and probably still nowadays, was to interview friends and family and people the victim knew, just to get an idea as to what they might have known. You know, 10 people might give the same story, but the 11th person might give a key piece of information that missed out. So it's common practice. But Glyn was so spooked by his police attention that after the interview, he immediately took an overdose in an attempt to kill himself. He was revived in hospital and then sent to the local psychiatric facility.
Now, this doesn't strike me as a kind of psychopathic trait, does it? He was so spooked or he got scared that he wanted to kill himself. Most proper serial killers that we've covered, they're quite proud of the fact that they've killed people and they like the attention, don't they?
Exactly. Well, that's the thing with the I'm not sure if psychopathy applies to this boy, because if you think about it, that's more of a reaction of someone who's either anxious, nervous, fearful. Yeah. That's not someone in a good frame of mind if they're frantically doing that. And you'll see from his later actions that he's no Ted Bundy bragging about it. And, you know, like the interview Ted Bundy said where he said, your first murder, everything's planned out. And he said, by the 10th, you can't find the tire iron.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. He's like, he wasn't like that. He was shitting himself. See, at the time, he was just viewed as a witness. But the fact that he tried to kill himself, this moved him to be prime suspect in the police's eyes. Now, due to him essentially being sectioned in this psychiatric hospital, his unusual behaviour whilst in the hospital concerned staff and caused them to investigate further. Now, it was found that he was suffering from a schizoaffective disorder.
So, schizoaffective disorder is a mental disorder characterized by abnormal thought processes and an unstable mood. The diagnosis is made when the person has symptoms of both schizophrenia, which is usually the psychosis part, and a mood disorder, so it's either bipolar or depression.
All right, so that actually compounds it then, doesn't it?
Yeah. We did find reports that, you know, later psychiatric reports showed that he suffered from extreme schizoaffective disorder and displayed psychotic tendencies when he fails to take medication, causing disinhibition and impulsive violence. His risk of reoffending, the court was told, is extremely high.
See, well, that's a bit of a key factor in his behaviour as well, isn't it? As like you'll hear later on this episode. It's interesting that schizoaffective is different from schizophrenia. I wasn't sure if this was the blanket term or anything like that, but
I've never heard of it. It sounds like it's very, very difficult to diagnose.
Yeah, well, a lot of these things are, especially the ones that are the conditions that are a combination of what's the word I'm using?
Combination of delights.
Or illnesses, I think that was the term I was going to use. But
Yeah, you know, that makes more sense. Quite the same.
If you're familiar with bipolar, he could have been in a period of mania whilst he was committing the crime, the murder, I'm not going to dumb it down, and then in a period of the depression side of it whilst being questioned, which has left him to think, that's it, nothing else to do, that's the only option, is to kill myself.
So even if he's in the mania kind of part of it, and he's also suffering from the psychosis, you know, he's got this voice telling him to do this stuff, he's in the mania, he's not going to be stopped.
Exactly, yeah, he's very driven. Yeah. Because people who don't have the auditory hallucinations are very driven when they're in the mania phase of bipolar. I mean, you hear stories about, I remember, were you in the class with me at uni when they were telling the story of a person that basically their husband was having an episode. She got up in the morning and he had put the house on the market. He put the car up for sale because he'd figured out how to make fish live forever.
I remember, I think we've talked about that on a podcast before. Yeah. Also, I did a mental health first aid course and we had a professional psychiatrist guy in, and he was telling us about it. He was saying he had one patient who was going through the mania managed to buy 9 Renault Clios in the same day.
Well, they're a very good car. Yeah. You know,
that salesman must have been loving it.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you know what? Another. Oh, go on then.
One more.
Yeah. So what's this name of this taxi company? Taxi company?
Yes, it's a serious condition.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Yeah, we shouldn't be laughing at it. Yeah. But it's the combination of these. It's funny how that you look at this bloke and go, oh, he's a psychopath. But when you actually look at the definition of psychopath and is he suffering from psychopathy, you think, well, actually, no, he's not.
Yeah, and then exactly,
you look into the fact that these two essentially completely different disorders with different symptoms can produce the same end result of extreme violence.
Yeah. We'll find out more about that later on, won't we?
Definitely. It's also worth pointing out that not everyone who's schizophrenic is violent. The majority of people who suffer from schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorders do not have violent symptoms. It's a very internalized illness. They're not dangerous to other people. They're more of a danger to themselves.
Yeah, and they can manage it as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Fine. Good.
So, throughout Dixie's ordinary life, he could usually mask these symptoms, but due to the stress of the investigation, being questioned by the police, he started to unravel.
Like a giant cotton ball just rolling down a spiral staircase.
Yeah. Well, the police, however, had no... it would. You just completely threw me with that then. Any more Shrek-based analogies?
Not yet.
Okay. The police, however, had no further evidence to link Dix to the crime.
If they couldn't link Dix to the crime, did they start looking for vaginas?
I'll give you that one because... Thank you. Nothing apart from his suicide attempt following being questioned, which could be explained by his mental condition. There was just no conclusive evidence. Until...
Dun, dun, dun.
Police actually managed to trace the gun to firearms dealers who confirmed they had sold the weapon to Dix, which is fair enough, really, because they've just basically said, did you have this shotgun with this serial number that looked a bit like this? And they'll just go, yeah.
Yeah, sold it to that guy.
Yeah, sold it to that guy, which was fine. Yeah. You know, there's no hate being administered at these guys. You know, it's just they were just had a gunshot. Yep. End of. Now, used shotgun cartridges were found in the woods, including one that was forensically matched to Dix's shotgun.
You don't need to call it Dix's shotgun, just call it his penis, please.
They had now placed him and his firearm...
Penis.
...at the scene where someone he knew had been shot. So that's like, the evidence is building up.
Yeah.
Did they know the person? Because they always say that people are murdered by someone that they know.
Yeah, most of the time it is, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Because a lot of it is access to people. You know, like, it's who's more likely to go to the woods with you? Someone you know or a random person from the bus stop? Well, exactly. I can tell you from experience, random women at the bus stop do not like to go to the woods with strangers.
Aye, aye, aye. Very good.
Dix was interviewed a second time and folded like a cheap suit. He confessed to being involved in her death and took the police to where he had hidden his shotgun. However, you'll notice my choice of words there. He admitted to being involved in her death. That's a very clever thing. That's kind of... It's similar to a case that I've been following in the news. It's almost like a challenge to the charge without denying it.
Explain yourself. So he's not saying, I killed her. He's like, I was involved in her dying.
Yeah, he's basically right. Saying that he's not refuting the evidence. With the a lot of the times the job of a defense lawyer solicitor, I watch that much American telly, I forget the British term, but the job of the defense in a trial is to introduce an element of doubt to the prosecution's evidence and things like that. It's the job of the prosecution to prove that they're guilty, not of the defense to prove that they're innocent.
Yeah.
The defence doesn't need to prove he was somewhere else. The defence just needs to prove that it's unlikely he was where they were saying they were, so to speak. So in this, him saying, well, yes, you've got evidence that I was there and you've got evidence of my gun being there because I took my gun there.
Yeah, okay.
So
yeah.
It seems like already he's being intelligent and he's angling for a lower sentence.
Let's see if it worked.
Well, okay. If it had probably... I don't know, been more intelligent, kept his mouth shut, might have worked, but his story kept changing. He started spouting bizarre and conflicting stories, and all this did was serve to prolong the agony of the family.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like he's just starting to panic a bit, changing his little stories here and there.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you don't know if this is part of the mania kicking in, if this is an episode of mania that's making him go on these long flights of fancy.
It could be like his first story, whatever it was. You know, then he started thinking about it later on. He's like, shit, that bit didn't make sense. So he's trying to change it again and then change it again.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the investigation discovered that Dix and his girlfriend Pamela Thomas were friends of Pierre. It was during his trial at Bristol Crown Court in 1980 that Dix alleged that Pierre told him her husband, James Overbury, mistreated her, and that Dix had been persuaded into taking out a contract on her husband's life in exchange for £2,000. There's something that I couldn't really... Like we say a lot of the time, there's lots of conflicting evidence out there about these cases. Lots of conflicting newspaper articles. And a lot of the time you think, well, if four newspapers say one thing and one says the next, then which are you going to trust?
Yeah.
But I managed to get into some local newspaper archives for this one. Down in Gloucester. And I was reading into... And basically, essentially, his first statement, apart from being, I didn't do it, the next kind of semi-true statement was that he tried to fix the two firearms dealers that had identified him as being the owner of the gun.
Oh, really?
He was like, oh, well, they know it's me because they did it. And he was like, yeah, they offered to kill him and like I was going to pay them. And I was the middleman. But then, obviously, they were two... To be honest, to become a registered firearms dealer, it's not easy. You either need to have a shop or be of an official level in a club. You need to have enough storage. You need to have proof that the weapons are coming and going, that you're not just a collector and stockpiling them. So it's very unlikely that those two men had anything wrong with them. Those two people were anything dodgy, and they weren't.
No, yeah. they were fine. They don't come up again, do they?
No, exactly. That's just like a fleeting accusation.
Bit of insight.
Exactly. Now, back to the main story that he went with. Dix claimed that he and Pierre had gone to a remote woodland location to discuss this murder-for-hire plot in private. Again, he had his own house. They could have done it walking on the street. It just doesn't make any sense. But Dix had taken the shotgun to demonstrate how he intended to carry out the killing.
Yep.
That doesn't make sense to me either. Not if you're going to say, I'll shoot him, unless he was... like, you don't need to be like, I'm sorry, I don't follow. What I'm going to do, I'm going to blow his brains out with a shotgun. I'm not getting it, Chief.
I don't understand. What do you mean?
Yeah, so basically, unless he was planning some, like, taxi driver gun down the sleeve of your jacket kind of job, then I don't... Unless he was saying, like, he could, like, pull it really quickly and fire it and, like, be really quick. I don't get what he was trying to...
I don't even think, like, there's no point in you even trying to think of things, because I don't even think he knew what he was trying to say at this point.
Yeah, that's to be honest, it's probably true. Now, he alleged that once he was at the woodland site, Pierre broke down and shared the state of her marriage and how she was mistreated and beaten and abused and things like that. And aside from a couple of they had a stormy marriage type comments, there's no evidence to prove that she was being beaten or anything like that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that she wasn't, that she may well have been, but it wasn't like it was common knowledge, and this could have been quite a lot of conjecture on his behalf if she said once or twice that she wasn't speaking to her husband, then he was like, oh, I can use this as an excuse.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, he's saying that she got upset, shared that her marriage was terrible, she was so unhappy, and then because she'd gone on for a while about how unhappy she was, Dix decided that because she said, apparently she said, I'd rather be dead, Dix decided that because Pierre was so unhappy, he would put her out of her misery once and for all and killed her.
That doesn't really, right? Doesn't really account for being tied up to a tree and raped, Bart, does it?
No, not at all. Some reports of this, I mean, obviously in reality, there was no such murder plot. This is all horseshit that he's made up.
Yeah.
But some reports that I read, because when bodies are in a state of decomposition and things like that, a lot of the time they can't pin down when certain things happened. With this one, they could only really say that there was sexual contact within 24 hours of her death.
All right, okay.
And obviously they've proved it was him. A couple of newspaper articles actually refer to the fact that he raped her and then 24 hours later, like the day after, he then killed her. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't make sense anyway, because one, if I'm not victim blaming at all if this was the case, but if something really bad happened to you, you would avoid all contact with the person and all any attempts to go back to that area.
Yeah, exactly. You'd report it, at least.
Even if you wouldn't report it, you wouldn't go around to see him again. This isn't her husband. This isn't someone that's got a psychological holdover. This is someone who, sometimes it says she's a friend. Interviews with the family say that he was an acquaintance or that he was someone they were renting a flat to, and their relationship existed of her going to collect the rent.
Yeah.
You know, there's differing stories, but basically, I don't buy that story that it was, I think it was a rape, a murder, a one night, because it just makes the most sense. It seems, yeah, it does.
It makes the most sense to me as well.
Yeah, exactly. Now, he was remanded in custody. The legal process went on, and when he went to trial, on the third day of the trial, faced with overwhelming evidence of sexual assault, like we mentioned, and most likely after the prosecution smashed the shit out of his false account of things, Dix's solicitor advised him to change his plea to guilty. However, never being one to back away from making something up and being a general fuckwit, Dix said he'd be inspired to rape and kill by a change of the seasons, suggesting an occult link, something that will feature again in this story. Following this change of plea, in July 1980, he was found guilty and jailed for life. To find out what happened after this, make sure to join us again for part 2 in 2 weeks' time.
For some more dicks.
Yeah. The reason why we're cutting this into two is because it is actually quite a big story. The second half is a lot bigger than this, and we think that we've got the groundwork out of the way, and it's a little bit of a shorter episode, this, but it's a bit of a treat. You know, and this is for you, Doug, so you can, you know, hopefully get it listened to before you get to work.
It's his birthday today while we're recording.
Is it?
Yep.
Oh, happy birthday, sir.
Happy birthday, Douglas.
Oh, we have a good one. When you're sat there and we can't do the thing that we'd planned, you know, I will watch a video on YouTube with you.
He texted me this morning saying that's Dune cancelled as well.
Yeah, I thought it would be. That's what I was speaking about, but
yeah.
Yeah, basically, we're doing that thing where we're discussing our social life on a podcast that goes out internationally, so...
Yeah, so I had chicken Kievs for dinner.
Did you?
Yeah, chicken Kievs and wedges.
I thought you made Chinese food.
No, that was like a snack earlier.
Oh, shit, right. I noticed that it was quite early, but oh, fair enough.
I was just bored. I was trying to make wontons, crispy wontons. They were good.
They look good. They did look good.
Didn't squeeze the air out of them enough, so when I deep fried them, they went...
What did they do? Oh, I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, it's the worst, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this episode's going to be a bit shorter. We're actually going to record the second one in about 10 minutes' time. Well, whenever we finish this. We might be a little bit more drunk after that.
Yep, I think we'll be. I'm going to go for a quick bathroom break, down this beer, open the enormous bottle of wheat beer that I've got, smash that, and then get stuck into the next episode.
Yeah. But it's a good place to stop because he's in jail, and we will rejoin him when he comes out of jail and what he does after that.
Yeah, as you can see from the next episode that's you're about to listen to in 2 weeks' time, it's an absolute roller coaster. So there's no place we can stop other than this. So, yeah. Like, thank you all for listening. And as is customary for podcasts of this nature, if you would like to join us on social media, our Facebook is facebook.com/messpodcast. If you're on the old Twitter, it's twitter.com/mess_podcast, which we don't really use because I don't like Twitter. I don't know what it is about it.
It's so bad, isn't it? I really don't like it.
It's like Facebook for idiots. I don't know. But then again, Instagram, I prefer Instagram out of all of them, and that's because... Yeah. Well, I don't know. But our Instagram is A Bloody Mess Podcast, and we're relatively active on there.
That's where, we'll contact us on that. That's what we always kind of use, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, I had an interesting comment from someone the other day that made me realise that we need to just slightly adjust the kind of the content that we produce, because one of the people in our listeners group said to another one of them, you know that meme group we're in, they've got a podcast.
Oh yeah, I remember you saying that, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, oh okay, I guess something went wrong in that. Something's gone wrong in the in the marketing of that group then.
But I think we got another listener from it, so it's fine.
Exactly, yeah. Eventually, and yeah. Slowly but surely, it's just, you know, we're getting there. But thanks for listening. Leave us a review. Tell your friends. And stay tuned till next week.
Stay safe and stay inside.
Yeah, stay safe.
Unless this is like November you're listening, then it's probably okay to go outside.
Yeah, if
society hasn't... Watch out for the zombies.
Yeah, if society hasn't collapsed, for fuck's sake, stop going to the shops.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, thanks for listening. And until next week, see you later, motherfuckers.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to another great podcast from the Fair City Podcast Network, group dedicated to connecting and developing podcasts. Check out fcpod.net for more great podcasts and content.